This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And now we're going to turn to the latest twist in the investigation of a White House leak to find out the identity of the person who named a CIA agent, Valerie Plame, a possible felony. The federal investigators have turned to reporters to name their sources. At least one has been cited for contempt for refusing to reveal his source and could go to jail. So what do you think? Are there situations where reporters should be forced to reveal their sources if it uncovers a crime? We'll take your calls and questions at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email at TOTN at NPR.org. Yesterday, as we mentioned, a federal judge held Time magazine reporter Matthew Cooper in contempt and ordered him to jail for refusing to name government officials who leaked the name of a former CIA officer to him. The magazine was also held in contempt. It's been ordered to pay a fine of $1,000 a day. The judge in the case, Thomas F. Hogan, stated he, quote, cannot accept the argument that the public interest in possible future news about crime must take precedence over pursuing and prosecuting those crimes. Journalists argue that the judge fails to realize the importance of allowing reporters to pledge confidentiality to their sources in exchange for important public information. If you're a journalist, a lawyer, or maybe just an avid newsreader, we want you to join the conversation. As we mentioned, the number is 800-989-8255. Joining us now is Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington University. He's with us by phone from his hotel in Fort Worth, Texas, and good to have you on the program again.
Thank you, Neil.
So let's start with the background in this case. Starting from the beginning, this involved the investigation in the run-up to the war in Iraq, and was there yellow cake for sale to Iraq and in Africa?
That's right. I mean, technically, it began with an op-ed by Joseph Wilson, who is Valerie Plame's husband, and he wrote in the New York Times that basically the allegations made by the Bush administration of that yellow cake were discredited and unfounded. That caused something of a firestorm politically for the president, and Wilson became persona non grata for a number of conservative columnists, including Robert Novak. And on July 14th, 2003, Novak wrote a column that basically outed Wilson's wife as a CIA official. And the article suggested that he had been pretty much selected at her request and revealed her role not just generally but by name. And in fact, he was criticized a great deal because it was rather gratuitous. You didn't have to reveal her name. It effectively ended her career. But the tenor of the piece was to sort of strike back, and strike back he did. The result was a firestorm because it is unlawful to reveal the identity of a CIA officer undercover and to reveal classified information of that kind. The result was an investigation first led by John Ashcroft, and he was ultimately forced to step aside and hand it over to Patrick Fitzgerald as a special prosecutor because there are allegations that the leak came from high up in the administration, including possibly the White House.
And there the hangs the tale. There was a long time then people were very skeptical that this leak investigation was going to be pursued. Leak investigations are notoriously difficult to come to any resolution, but this has been pursued with some vigor.
That's right. I mean, it's very interesting because, as you know, Washington really floats on a river of leaks. I mean, it is one of the currencies in the city, and you can, in any given week, open up the Washington Post and find an intentional leak by the administration and maybe a couple of unintentional leaks. But this one was different, and partially I think that's because of the political times that we are living in. And so Fitzgerald went after this leaker, or leakers, because Novak referred to two administration officials. But the obvious place for him to start, since he doesn't know who those officials are, and in fact they've interviewed people at the White House and the government that have denied being the source, the only other choice is to go after the reporters. And there's the rub, because these reporters are under a professional obligation not to reveal a confidential source. And we have now this tremendous constitutional confrontation between the right of the media to be free of this type of subpoena and testimony and the right of the government to investigate crimes.
Isn't it the obligation of the investigator in this case to exhaust all other resources before turning to reporters? I mean, have those government officials been hauled in front of the grand jury to testify?
Well, in fact, you're right. Basically, the standard in this case comes from a 1972 Supreme Court case called Brazenburg versus Hayes. And in that case, Justice White rejected the argument by journalists that they had a First Amendment protection not to be forced to speak at a grand jury. Now, this was a close 5-4 decision, and it was a bitter split among the justices. But five justices said that there was no First Amendment barrier to that type of testimony, but also said that in order to sort of haul a journalist in front of a grand jury, the government must show, one, that the journalist possesses the information of the crime. That's easy because they publish these articles. Two, the information is unavailable from other sources. And three, that there's a compelling need for the information that overrides the First Amendment interests. Now, one is easy. Two is what the government's arguing now. They're saying, look, we've interviewed everyone that we can think relevant in the White House. They've all denied it. They've all said that they are beyond suspicion. Some have actually waived First Amendment, privilege issues by sending a letter to a journalist to say, please talk about me if I did this. And they said, now we're running out of options. We've got to talk to these reporters. And then finally, they're saying there's a compelling need here because this was a disclosure of a CIA operative.
Joining us now from his office in Newark, New Jersey, is a former federal prosecutor, Robert Mintz. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How does a prosecutor weigh the demands of the First Amendment, freedom of the press, against those of justice in these situations?
Well, I think prosecutors tread very gingerly into the First Amendment area. The Justice Department has very strict guidelines about subpoenaing journalists or subpoenaing records from media outlets for this very reason, because this is a clash of some very serious constitutional rights, the First Amendment versus the government's need to prosecute criminal cases. And here, I think what the judge found was a circumstance in which he was persuaded by the government that they had exhausted all other available means, that their request was narrowly tailored, that he thought that that the information that they were seeking was direct evidence of innocence or guilt, that it went to the very heart of what they were investigating, and essentially that there was no other choice for the government to get this information except from these journalists.
Is the situation different if it's a grand jury or, a case in court?
Well, I think the judge would look much more seriously at the case if it's a criminal case versus a civil case, for example. There are some journalists who have been subpoenaed in connection with the Wen Ho Lee civil case. Mm-hmm. I think the standard there is going to be different because...
The former Los Alamos scientist.
Exactly. But there, again, we're not talking about a criminal case where here the charges are very serious. The allegation is that information was leaked, obviously, that might have imperiled the safety of a CIA operative, a very serious charge. And what the government is trying to show here is that they're actively and vigorously pursuing this. There's obviously an independent counsel appointed, or at least a U.S. attorney who is outside of the Justice Department's direct supervision here, and they're trying to show that they are going to pursue this no matter where it leads. And the problem is if they bail out on this and they don't pursue this, then they're going to be subject to the criticism that they swept it under the rug because the allegations point back to the White House.
We're talking about the developing confrontation over the First Amendment that's here in Washington over the investigation of an alleged White House leak. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some callers on the line. Randy's with us from East Haddam, Connecticut.
Hi, Neil. Listen to your show on a regular basis. I think what concerns me the most about this whole situation is a question of balance, really. The fact that, information has been divulged, which could endanger lives greatly. As an ex-Navy SEAL and having done some things that required utmost secrecy, I unfortunately saw friends taken from me because of informational leaks. And, you know, these were people that were well-trained, were supported very heavily by our government, and were doing things to protect our country and to protect our safety. And information was leaked, and I ended up being my friends. I understand that there are First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and protecting speeches, but where's your allegiance to your newspaper or to your country?
Do you blame the
deeply troubling question?
And do you blame the leakers or the recipients of the leak?
I would say that the blame is definitely shared by both. The leakers should be thinking about what they're saying, and the people that are using it for whatever purpose they are using it for should really think about what they do before they release that information. I mean, take a look back to the Ainge case. How many ground operatives did we lose back in the 80s? How many people died because this guy was selling secrets? Tell me, what is the difference between selling a secret and having a byline and getting paid for? Not very much, except for the name on the paycheck.
Jonathan Turley, there would be a lot of people who would take issue with Randy on that.
Well, I would take issue. First of all, there is a world of difference between a spy and a reporter and their motivations. Just as certainly there are dangers in terms of leaks, and I think journalists do exercise a great deal of discretion in what they publish, you also have to remember that journalists, through leakers, have produced tremendous reforms. That's the reason journalists are given such special protection under the United States Constitution. The framers understood that a free press was one of the key, if not the greatest, guarantees of good government. So you have to remember that history has shown us, from the Pentagon Papers to Watergate to countless other scandals, that it is often at the end of a leak that we find tremendous issues of government reform. The other thing I want to note is there's no question, in my view, that Robert Novak showed tremendously poor judgment in naming this individual. It was purely a gratuitous act on his part. He didn't need the name. He could have mentioned that his wife worked at the CIA and achieved the same purpose. So there was, in my view, a clear gratuitous and retaliatory effort, and it's unfortunate. But that also informs us in terms of the standard of why we're doing this. I don't believe that even if you use the Brazenberg standard, that there's a compelling need for this information that overrides the First Amendment issues. We're not talking about someone who released a field operative's name that put others in danger. Thank God Novak's release did not put her life in danger. But I don't believe that it is worth the candle to start putting journalists in jail who are trying to defend their privilege. And my last point is that I disagree.
And would you make it quick, please, if we want to get to another call?
Yeah, it's only that the number of these subpoenas is increasing. Prosecutors are not showing restraint. They are hitting reporters with subpoenas in record levels.
Okay. Randy, thanks very much. Your phone line was betraying you there, so we had to let you go. I apologize for that. Let's hear quickly from Martin. Martin's in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, I'm enjoying your show, and I have a rather simple question to ask. Since it was Mr. Novak who released the information, why wouldn't the Justice Department utilize him first as the case to determine First Amendment rights?
Robert Mintz, we heard from Mr. Novak's attorney in the paper this morning, neither confirming nor denying that his client had received a subpoena.
Well, you can be fairly certain that prosecutors have already spoken to Mr. Novak, and what they're trying to do is gather corroborative evidence through talking to these other journalists. That is the obvious avenue to pursue, and if for some reason they hadn't spoken to him, then it certainly would be fair criticism that they should speak with him. But it's unlikely that the judge would have allowed this contempt order to go through and be trying to force these other journalists to speak if prosecutors haven't already disclosed privately to the court that Mr. Novak had already received a subpoena and had, in fact, cooperated with the investigation.
Martin, thanks very much. Good question. And I wanted to thank both of our guests today. By the way, it appears other subpoenas may have been issued to the Washington Post, as we heard Time Magazine, perhaps to Robert Novak as well. This is a long way from finished. Jonathan Turley, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
answer.
Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington University, with us by phone from Fort Worth, Texas. Robert Mintz, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Robert Mintz, a former federal prosecutor, joined us from his office in Newark, New Jersey. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.